Hello, my fellow hempo sapiens and imbibers of the fiber. I am Vivian McPeak, and your sensitive audio orifices are being sonically stimulated by listening to Hemp Present on Cannabis Radio through the wonders of this worldwide webcast. If you have feedback, would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. In 1982, Richard Stockton became the morning talk show host of WKDA-KDF in Nashville, Tennessee, which was the number one talk show in the Mid-South for 2 years. In 1986, he became a full-time touring comedian based in San Francisco. In his 36 years as a stand-up comedian, he has appeared on dozens of national TV shows, headlined A-list comedy clubs from coast to coast, improv, punchline, comedy underground, comedy works, and more, growing an audience of devotees to his unique take on the human potential movement. His first book, Fondle the Fear, is now in its third printing and is the basis for a TV show by the same name, broadcast by Comcast Television in West Coast markets. He also creates short stories of transformation for NPR stations KQED, KUSP, and KAZU in Northern California. He currently produces and hosts Planet Cruise Comedy with Richard Stockton, a live comedy variety show performed at the Real Theater, or at least he has recently. And he's joining me today to share some of his stories with us. Welcome, Richard, to Cannabis Radio.
Hey, Vivian. Hi.
My brother. Mm-hmm. So you got such a cool career and story. I'm just curious about what in your early life prepared you to be a stand-up comic. What influences or role models contributed to your success as a comic?
Apparently, when I was 5 years old, I was born in the Deep South, Bakersfield, California, and it is a culture of its own. Bakersfield is, and I have a huge family. The Stocktons are ubiquitous there. We're everywhere in Bakersfield, and so we're having this Thanksgiving dinner, and it is enormous. Tables and tables and tables, right? Cousins far away coming in. And apparently, just before the turkey was carved in front of everyone, I, at 5 years old, got up on the table and did my impression of a dying turkey. Hands around the throat, staggering around, obnoxious little kid. My mother, she told me, she said, "You took 2 years off my life." Anyway, it was actually well received, and I kind of filed that away in my mind. And then years and years and years later, I know it's Bill Cosby, for all he was and is, he was a great comedian. And when I saw him, do Noah on the Ed Sullivan Show, I went, "Oh, I want to do that." So it, yeah. Yeah, I've always been attracted to comedians, and then I finally got to be one. I was born at a time when, you know, like I was 40 years too late. I wanted to be in vaudeville, but then stand-up comedy came along, and it's kind of like vaudeville. It's very much like vaudeville.
You know, life is tragic. Life is tragic, and comedy is one of the things that makes it bearable. Do you agree?
I get through by making fun of things to an excess, actually. Yeah.
Well, in your mind, what is it that makes a stand-up comic good? What's the secret sauce to making people laugh, other than, of course, the secret syrup, alcohol?
Yeah, connection. It's about connection. It's not a monologue. It's a dialogue. It's a dialogue between them. You are connecting with the people, and you can connect. When you can, you know, connect, then they can give it up and they can relax. And, you know, you're trying to get that moment when everybody in the first row, it's called a head bob. They go down, you know, you've seen it in a comedy club. Everybody in the first row laughs so hard, they bend over and they let all their air out. And my buddy, Will Durst, he's a satirist, political satirist, comedian. He tells me, he goes, "Man, it's when they lose that air. It's when they expel all their air and they can't breathe. That's when hope comes in." And it's true. You can just see it. You can feel it in the room.
Yeah. When you leave them gasping for breath, man, you know that you're on.
You lose your, well, you think about it, you know, when you like exercise or have sex or you inhale real deeply on a bong or whatever it is, when you stop breathing, there's a moment which your head clears of all that monkey chatter, right? All the crap bouncing around there. And all of a sudden you can go, oh, wait a minute. And you're trying to get to that, oh, wait a minute moment.
So it sounds like you have inhaled on a bong. Are you still an imbiber of the fiber?
Imbiber of the fiber. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Absolutely. It is part of my health regime. I tell you, I started running and people tell me that running can damage my joints. That's why I smoke them before I run. Yeah.
It's good to be able to run if you're a doper, because you can run for the cop sometimes, and you know it's
I'm sure we've all run from the police at one time or another.
Yeah, I've even run to them a couple times. You know, life is complex. So, in addition to being a comic, you're also a musician. You spent some time as a singer and guitar player for a country rock band called the Skunk Band, that eventually led you to start researching the story of the legendary Sam the Skunk Man. And this story kind of touches on the origins of Skunk Bud. And I'm just hoping that you could illuminate us a little bit on some of this urban folklore.
Urban folklore, indeed. It is a circle that coheres, Vivian.
Yes, sir. So
it's from a town. It's the same thing about Santa Cruz. Is people in Santa Cruz, they believe in their own magic. They believe in their own myth. They believe in their own legends. And the skunk thing, which came from Santa Cruz County, it was developed in Santa Cruz County about half a century ago. I didn't even know that. I'm this old hippie, and I'm walking down the street in Seabright, which is a cool neighborhood of Santa Cruz, and this woman stops me, elderly woman. She's very well dressed to the nines. She's got a tiny little dog with her, clearly not from Santa Cruz. And she says, sir, do you live here? And I said, yeah, I do. How can I help you, ma'am? And she said, wow, I really love this town. I love it. But everywhere I go in this town, I smell skunks. I do not see them, but I smell skunks everywhere here. And I go, yeah, well, they're shy. They like to stay in the backyard. And in truth, in the fall, you can just walk around Santa Cruz and it smells like the town is full of skunks. There are many backyard growers here. And it turns out that I missed everything. I got playing for this band. This was in the 80s. And I got a gig singing, playing guitar for the Skunk Band. Well, I didn't get it. I mean, I am absolutely one of the most naive people you've ever met. I'm 6 feet tall. I used to be 6'1", but I'm compressing. I think I'm just getting denser and denser. and because I miss these things, and I'm playing for the Skunk Band. And I asked the leader of the Skunk Band, I actually said, where did this name come from? He looked at me like I was crazy, and he hands me a joint, and I still didn't get it. But I got to tell you, that weed they had, it was so pungent, and it gave me this uncanny ability to focus on detail. I mean, weed's that way anyway. It lets us come to the microcosm rather than the macrocosm, right? Especially sativa. But I'd look at the fretboard of my guitar, and like if we wanted to put a guitar lead into a different key, transposing it was just, I could just see it. It was almost like I was looking at the keyboard of a piano, and I'm like, wow, that is amazing weed. Well, the Skunk Band, I moved on, they moved on, and I forgot about them, and I forgot about their weed for 40 years. And then in 2018, I moved to the South Santa Cruz County town of Watsonville. I found this farm out in the vineyards, and these really cool people let me set up my Airstream trailer for a crash pad in Santa Cruz. And I became friends with the owner of the farm, Wayne. And Wayne, crazy old dude, could not stop rattling on about his frozen weed seeds. And you know, it's a stoner babble. I'm trying to be polite. And I, so a year rolls on and he keeps talking about these seeds. And he talks about some character called Sam the Skunk Man. And after a while, I talked to a couple other people in the community and wow, this is starting. Maybe this is a real story. And I start researching who Sam the Skunk Man is. And Wayne's story turns out to be true. And it goes like this.
Leave us teetering on the precipice of this historical chronicling of the origins of skunk. We're going to roach this segment, roll up a fatty one, and come right back. And then we're going to find out the 411 on the 420, man. So we'll be right back.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
Hello, baby. I am Pepe Le Pew. We are back on Hemp Present here with the lowdown on the hoedown here. So you were just telling us, Richard Stockton, about the origins of skunk and Sam the Skunk Man. Who is Sam the Skunk Man?
Okay, Sam the Skunk Man. Let's take our story back to 1978, and that's when Sam the Skunk Man was starting to, he had created Sacred Seeds. His name was actually David Watson, and he developed cannabis seed strains in Watsonville, California, in his little, very small grow house. He wasn't Sam the Skunk Man yet, but he was putting out, he actually was the first person who ever created a seed company in the United States. Anyway, in 1978, my buddy Wayne wants to grow. He hears about Dave Watson. He buys 100 seeds of flying skunk from Sacred Seeds, paid $1 a seed, but he couldn't grow them out. Life happened, you know, he got married, pregnant, whatever, and he couldn't grow out the seeds. But he reads on the back of the package, they'll keep longer if you freeze them. So that's what Wayne did. He froze all 100 seeds. Well, some of his buddies were also growing out David Watson's new strain with Sacred Seeds. And it was incredible. And Wayne knew he had something incredible with his frozen seeds. And it was almost like Bilbo Baggins' obsession with the ring, you know, Frodo and the ring and the Lord of the Rings. Wayne became more and more obsessed with his seeds, talking to everybody about them. And I finally realized, wait a minute, this is a real story. This is the real thing. And so I say, hey, Wayne, let me grow them. And he says, I don't know, they're so old, they've been frozen, you know, they probably won't grow. And well, he gave me 40 of them, 38 of them germinated, and we grew this weed. And the hoop house is about 150 yards from my trailer, and the inside of my trailer smells like skunks lived in it. It was the most, yeah. And so we really do have something. So I wrote this article for Cannabis Chronicles. And lo and behold, I get from Amsterdam, or he's in the Netherlands, I think. Anyway, David Watson, who had changed his name to Sam the Skunk Man, emails me about the seeds. And so he's telling me what I got wrong with the article, because you know, 50 years ago, I spoke with three Santa Cruz seed producers from the 70s about skunk, and I got three different stories. All I know for certain is these guys can smoke me under the table. I have no idea about Sam the Skunk Man, marketing genius, benevolent scientist, fast-talking opportunist. Maybe he's all of those things. But what Sam did was, in the early 80s, he took he had been putting together Afghan and Colombian and Acapulco golds, and he was experimenting. He wanted to bring the height down from Colombian, which grows really tall. And, you know, back then you went to prison if you were caught growing weed. So to escape the cops, he wanted the heights to come down and he wanted to mitigate the smell of something. So he kept mixing these together and he came up with I guess what is now skunk number one. You can buy it. You can go on. There's a guy out of Oakland selling it. And he took it to Amsterdam, became a big star over there. Everybody loved the skunk weed and he changed his name to Sam the Skunk Man. Sam reached out to me with a couple emails explaining to me what I got right and what I got wrong. And and what he took over there was true breeding. You know, he'd done five or seven or whatever. What the seeds that Wayne bought were the F1s or F2s. This is what Sam the Skunk Man told me. They were the F1s or F2s before he actually got the skunk number one. And so, and Sam's story is, you know, like the police busted his Watsonville seed operation. I think it was in 1982. And he sneaked back in and recovered all his seeds. And he went to Amsterdam and Neville Schoenmakers of the Seed Bank of Holland started selling skunk number one. And they started making, as you know, there's like 1,000 different versions of skunk now.
Right.
But the thing that's interesting about Wayne seeds is these precede skunk. They are the F1s, and I grow them out, and it's amazing the array. There are some of them, little fat Afghani things that are like 3 feet tall, 2 feet tall. There are Colombian. There are Colombian phenotypes that come out that are so tall. I don't know how tall. We had to cut them up. We had to keep cutting them off. They wouldn't fit in the hoop house.
Right.
So you get this array of F1 types. It takes a real seed nerd to get into this. But
I was just going to say that I'm up here in Washington State in the Pacific Northwest, which is kind of Northern Lights region.
Right.
And we were talking before the show how, you know, legalization has changed a lot of things, a lot of states with the brick and mortar stores. And I mean, I remember the odoriferous pungence that would stimulate the sensitive olfactory glands of the nose. I would remember getting weed that was, you couldn't have it on your body and get in an elevator without everybody in the elevator knowing. You're like, who's got the skunk bud, man? Like, knock you over. I mean, you used to have to put three or four different Ziploc baggies to fly on a plane, you know, just to try to get this and, you know, put it with it. With a dryer, one of those dryer things, you know, just to try to change the smell of it. And the weed now, I go into the rec store and I get the what we call here 502 weed because that's our law that legalized it, and it doesn't have much of a smell. And I miss the sticky, gooey, light green. Just you could literally take a bud, stick it on the wall, and it would be there for about 10 minutes before it would fall. Did you notice a change in the rec weed, that it's a little different, that it doesn't smell skunky?
I don't really like, I honestly don't buy dispensary weed. And you know, like you, like probably, I know so many people who grow such amazing varieties that I don't go to dispensaries. Well,
look at where you
right.
live, right? It's where you live, man. That's the,
well,
the cradle
Santa
of.
Santa Cruz is. It's just, yeah.
The cruise is where it all started in America.
It may have in that respect. So there's this guy, Jade Nectar.
We got about 30 seconds, so.
All right, Jade Nectar. Jeff Nordahl of Jade Nectar is a grower. He does a lot of public domain stuff. He's really doing tremendous work to keep strains free to the public. He just grew some out and he just called me this morning and he said, this stuff is the smelliest stuff I've ever had in my life. He goes, I smoked some last night, picked some last night. He goes, I'm driving in my car. My wife goes, good Lord, go take a shower. Anyway, so it is, it's very, very odoriferous.
Right on. Well, we're going to take another quick break, but don't go anywhere because we have a fat sack of a third segment to fire up here in just a second. Don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
On Hemp Present with Richard Stockton. Richard, your skunkalicious tale of Toklore has been most illuminating. You're down there in California. I'm surprised you're not in Stockton, California, actually.
One would think. I think we'd be talking about, we would be talking about meth if I was in Stockton.
Yeah. Yes. Sad, but true, man. Sad, but true. Man. As a third generation, as a fifth generation Californian, who's all three of my kids are born in California. I feel your misery there. Santa Cruz, when I was growing up in LA, right, in West LA, Santa Cruz was kind of like a hippie mecca. The Cruz is what we called it. And, there was surfing and there was hippies and back to the Landers. It was one of the breadbaskets of homegrown cannabis weed at the time. What's Santa Cruz like today?
In terms of weed, it's still roaring strong. We've gotten hit with, I think Ricky was talking about commodification of weed and
right.
commodification of everything in Santa Cruz. So expensive to live there.
Gentrification.
There's gentrification too. Yeah. But everything costs money there. And that is one thing that has been hard for the sensibility of the 60s. That was developed in Santa Cruz. I mean, it was really. I went to UCSC in 1968. Yeah, and one of the people I attended the class with was Dr. Timothy Leary, who was actually there. He never was on the faculty, but that's the kind of place it was. It's much the same like that. It has big city problems now. But in terms of cannabis, there is tremendous work and scientists are working there. And it's quite a scene. It's really cool. We finally achieved the ability to work with new strains, new whatever. And that's what's so interesting about Wayne's seeds is they're ancient and the genetics are from like 50 years ago. You can't get... Once you start taking a strain and messing with it, which is a great thing to do, but you're coming up with bubblegum, whatever, weed that is a combination of all these things, you lose the ability to access the original. And the thing about Wayne seeds, these are F1s. There is Afghani. I mean, you're getting an Afghani plant from 50 years ago.
It's really,
you're getting a Colombian.
It's really a science today, And I have to tell you that I had Terry Haggerty, the guitar player of Sons of Champlin, which was a huge San Francisco psychedelic era band. I had Terry Haggerty on the show about maybe 6 months ago, and he also has strains that he's been growing for the last 50 years, and he may or may have not sent me through the mail some of his primo weed. He may or may not have done that. I can't confirm that he would actually do something crazy like that.
And I may or may not have enjoyed it.
And it's just, it all comes back. It and that really reminds me of what weed used to smell and taste like. We got about 50 seconds or 30 seconds left to talk. RichardStockton.com, is that right?
Go to RichardStockton.com. You can see my comedy on YouTube at Richard Stockton Comedy. And I have an article coming out in Skunk Magazine, I'm told. Maybe you could tell them more about that.
I can substantiate the rumors that the winter issue of Skunk Magazine has a story very similar to the one that you've told with even more embellishments on it.
Good.
Richard, thank you so much for taking a part in this. It's great to talk to you, my friend, and I hope that we will stay in touch.
Let's stay in touch, Vivian. See you, Ricky. Bye, guys.
That concludes this installment of Hemp Present on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you've got the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice, so find your voice and speak up for justice because resistance is fertile. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. Stay strong. See you next week. Marijuana, THC.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.